Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Well, hello, and welcome again to the iHealth channel and iHealth Radio, another show, another guest. And today we're going back to the age factor, and we're going to be discussing a little bit about careers. And I know in a previous show we've talked about careers in the insurance world, and we talked about brokerage and how to become a broker, how to get licensed, so on and so forth. But today we have a specialist, you know, in a different world, but career development in general. And specifically, we're going to discuss pharma. Potentially, we'll discuss more opportunities based on the experience. We have Zach Bellinger, and he's from Georgia. And he is actually going to talk to us a little bit more about, you know, different paths that we can take. I mean, a lot of us, you know, kind of sometimes wind up not sure where we want to be. And, you know, sometimes guidance is important. I think Zach also works as a consultant with LinkedIn and, you know, does different things to help folks. Besides his regular job, he'll tell us a little more about that. He's also a writer and an author of a couple of books, and we'll talk about those in a minute. So with, you know, that introductions, Zach, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on your show. Look forward to it.
Yep. My pleasure. So Zach, tell us a little bit about your background in general. I mean, I try to do it. I never do justice, you know, more than the actual guest themselves. So,
Yeah, I have an interesting one. So I went to, as you can tell by the shirt, I went to the University of Tennessee. I actually finished my degree a little bit early. I finished in 3 years, and I wanted to be in sales because really that's all the jobs that I kind of knew. And I knew I didn't like accounting or finance, never knew what I really wanted to do. But I thought, you know, let me go into pharmaceuticals, make the most money. And so I got out of college. I had a year experience in a business-to-business sales role. And then it took me about 250 job interviews with over 50 companies before I landed my very first opportunity in pharmaceutical sales. And that took me about a year. And then after that, I spent about 13 years in that industry. And then I recently, about 4 years ago, took a job promotion where I'm in marketing with a pharmaceutical company. And I do what they call field-based marketing. So a little bit of everything when you're talking about pharmaceutical marketing, you're talking about speaker programs, advisory boards, consultancy agreements, medical conferences, what kind of sponsorships your company wants to do there. So in that genre.
Okay. Wow. Well, so it's funny you talked about the college and stuff. And, you know, I have a lot of friends personally that And usually in high school, people try to figure out a way, you know, like, what am I going to be major in? What kind of college I want to go to? What kind of program I want to get in? And of course, everybody, there's the parents' views, there's your views, there's your friends' views, and you get all in the mix. And then you have all these applications you submit all over the place, and hopefully you'll get a few, and then you get to pick. But then what I've realized, and in my career, I've been in the insurance world for a long time, and I've met a lot of people. And a lot of them, you know, would literally swear that whatever they studied is not what they're doing. And they wind up in a whole different path. And it's very rare where you find someone started something and finished it in the same, you know, career path. Like my best friend studied accounting, and he became, you know, he went into the sales world and insurance world with me. You know, so it's kind of funny, but really it is a very big topic where people need to realize, like, well, where do I go? How do I do this? Is there a way to think about it? Is there a process that can help with that decision making? I mean, there is, obviously. Maybe you can give us some guidance on that. You know, we'll see what do you have? What do you got with that?
Yeah, I've gotten to talk on colleges across the world, and what I've been consistent about is a simple message, and it seems so simple, but for college students, let's say you're a senior in high school or you're a freshman right now, really the key is to get plugged in your career services center on campus. Each college has one of these type buildings or services, and what they do is it's a great place to network and to get your foot in the door. And then you start taking personality profile tests. And then you start working with career coaches. Because guess what? Those people that work in there are actually certified career coaches. And so for people that are 40 or 50 years old out there, they hire career coaches. Career coaches cost about $150 per hour and usually require at least six sessions. So if you think about it, that's quite a bit of money. Well, college students, that's included in your tuition. So why not get plugged into those? And also, Hurricane, think about this. When employers want to hire students, where's the first place they're going to go to on a campus? They're going to go to the Career Service Center. And so they have relationships with a lot of those companies that come through there. So your job as a freshman is continually keeping engaged with the career centers, take your mock interview when you go there, discuss, do a career pathway, do a career assessment. A lot of times you can weed out particular careers that you're not good at. For example, I'm not very good on the analytics side. So a financing role or maybe an accounting role wouldn't be great for me, but I do like presenting and speaking and training. And so maybe they can align different careers to based on my personality and my strengths. And that is what I believe the key is people need to do when, say, enter college.
Very nice. Again, I mean, that is important, and definitely thank you for that clarification. And some people may know about it. I mean, I'm not sure that a lot of people know that you can have one that you can recruit and help you and guide you in maybe a career change. And that's that. A lot of people also do that. They start in a path, it's a dead end, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And then you'll find yourself in a whole different world. And so we'll talk about that in a minute. But just before that, I know you talked about marketing, and you talked about a different aspect of marketing. Because I've had a couple of shows, and we talked about marketing and sales in general, events marketing, and we've talked about digital marketing. But you've talked about a whole different approach in the pharma world about what you do on a day-to-day, I guess, basis. Can you just expand a little bit more about that? So, for example, I'm a pharma company, and I'd like to set up, I guess, my products around the certain, marketplace. How does that work? I mean, what is your role in that game?
Yeah, I think the difference between a lot of other companies is pharmaceuticals is highly regulated. So you think about it, there's a lot of regulation, which you kind of understand because, there's sensitivity about drug pricing as well as insurances, Medicare, Medicaid. So there's a lot of restrictions and regulations what pharmaceutical companies can't do. We've all seen those commercials on TV where the safeties are like, 3 minutes of the video and the drug advertising is maybe 10 seconds. Well, that's because it's regulated. So a lot of people don't know that. It's not that the companies are just dying to do that. It's all about regulations and what you can and can't do, and you have to balance safety out. So I said all that to say this. So a lot of the approach we have in marketing to pharmaceuticals may look different. We have to play by different rules and regulations in other industries, let's say, such as oil or commodities or retail. You can do other things like that. But really, the essence of marketing is you have two different people you're going after. You're going after the prescriber, which is the physician, or if your drug, let's say your drug's like Benadryl and it's over the counter, they call it, and they can buy it from Walmart or Sam's or Costco, then you would be focusing on the patient. So there's patient marketing and then there's doctor marketing. And so it depends on what your drug does and what it's indicated for. Now, I'm just in the doctor marketing side where my whole message is to get the awareness of the brand, disease state awareness. So I'm trying to target physicians in different levels where they may not realize this treatment option exists. And so we need to find regulatory and compliance safety standards and measures to make sure to apply this marketing approach to physicians while we're within the guidelines, if that makes sense whatsoever.
No, it does. Now, when we're talking regulatory, so we're talking FDA, that primarily the core, you know, regulatory body that actually, you know, has to do with all the marketing and what you can do. And the reason I'm asking, because, you know, in our world, in the insurance world, and especially government programs, CMS is our, you know, regulatory body. So I'm not sure if there's any touch between CMS, you know, even in the pharma, there might be.
There's actually different agencies for everything you can think of. So CMS is usually involved with the Medicaid payer side of it or the Medicare. So yeah, there's different regulatory bodies. There's the Stark Law, where there's anti-physician kickback statutes and all this. So there's many rules and regulations and laws that are put in place there to protect the consumer. And so those are in place. So we have certain guidelines that we can do within that pharmaceuticals. And then you have to work towards that guideline. So how do I get the awareness out about my product, promote it, you know, put it in the right place where physicians can see it? And so that's the strategic role that I'm kind of assigned behind of how to do that and stay compliant.
Excellent. Well, it's important. It's a big industry. And to your point, I mean, it does impact, you know, the health. I mean, prescriptions can be, you know, good for you, but if taken the wrong way with the wrong mix of medication, whatever. I mean, there's also education that takes place, you know, with the providers and whoever is prescribing. So it's a lot of work. I mean, it's not easy. And I like I told you earlier, I almost made it into Merck, but not quite. You know, but it is what it is. But it was a good experience, at least going through the recruiting process and the interview process. And I think staying within the topic today, when I experienced that, it was not easy. You know, many people, and you'll tell us more about this, they think, okay, I'm going to just apply for a job with pharma and it's going to be an easy breezy. No, it wasn't. And it was a lot of stages that I had to go through, you know, from just a seminar to many things. But I know you'll tell us more about how that process goes and also different paths within the pharma and maybe even paths in other career paths, in other careers types.
Absolutely. Yep. Happy to talk about any of it. You know, I think you touched on one thing too, as well as, you know, there's so many different pathways you can take in pharmaceuticals. And a lot of people automatically think the sales route, or they think, you know, automatically a couple of different things, but really we do even internship programs where we bring in a summer intern. And now those are pretty competitive. So, you know, we can talk about that process and what it looks like, but every company sometimes has interns where they bring in a college student. And that is really the key, because you get to learn. I wish I could have done that, thinking, you know, if I look back on it, because A, it gets you exposure to the company. You get to meet all these different people in different roles and responsibilities. And then second of all, it helps you create these relationships, that your network, and that's how you form your LinkedIn, and your network's your key to getting jobs. So these internships could be valuable to some of your audiences that would may want to consider that route that are in college.
And so for folks to get involved in internships, I mean, is that something published in pharma sites and career, you know, websites, or are they potentially promoted at colleges? How's that?
Yeah, the big thing that I'm seeing right now, the industry's going towards, is LinkedIn. We are hiring the majority of our applicants through that software. Now, they have a purchase program where you can funnel out leads, but all your recruiters and pharmaceuticals are typically recruiters for each genre of the business. So there's usually a pharmaceutical sales recruiter or a pharmaceutical VP recruiter, you know, the top end people that they try to go after. So everything's really being done on LinkedIn right now. So that's why it's so important to have your LinkedIn profiles updated, spell check, all that good jazz, and to where you can stand out among your competition.
So to that effect, what would you recommend to be a good LinkedIn profile to get some attention? I mean, yeah. What does make an actual 5-star LinkedIn profile?
Yeah, visit mine. No, I'm kidding. So
that's good. We will.
Yeah, right. You know, you look at a LinkedIn profile. First of all, you have to have a professional photo. I see people making these mistakes all the time. They'll do a selfie in their car. You know, really a professional photo, you you really like to have a professional headshot is what I call it. Then you want to put down what your title is, and not just sales. You know, like mine, for example, is speaker. It's strategic marketing. It's brand innovation. It's what you've done, what your core skills, and you put that on there and it attracts more people. And LinkedIn has an algorithm. A lot of people don't know this. The words that you put on your profile will actually link to job descriptions, and they can do that. So the more you put about your job description, what you did, how, what you accomplished at a company, what some of your skills are, your GPA, all this kind of stuff, if you have this on your LinkedIn profile, it's going to match with other jobs that are on the LinkedIn recruiting platform. So that's why it's so key to fill these out in complete detail. Make sure to put your volunteer experience, any courses that you've had, make sure you have your degree on there. I was talking to a career coach the other day, said she was working with a client that just had a master's degree on there. And she said, well, where's your bachelor's? Did you not get your bachelor's degree? And he's like, well, I didn't put it on there. You know, well, why not? You know, so make sure your profile is completely, you want to make it sure almost as impeccable as a resume, to be quite honest with you.
Well, to that point, I mean, I know a lot of jobs, when you apply for them, they can literally, you know, they use your LinkedIn profile as the actual introductory resume, and they download the data automatically from your profile. So to your point, if it's not accurate, you know, you wind up rewriting the stuff when you go to that, you know, particular site for that application. I personally had to do that once, and I found it interesting that I had to literally click on my LinkedIn. I was like, wait a minute, this is not enough information. So I was putting in more data. Eventually I got my profile clean and I think it's up to par now, but certainly that helped, you know, the case, but yeah, detail is important. And recruiters are looking for something specific, right? They're not going to waste a lot of time, you know, digging within. They want to see that first two things that will impress you, and boom. And they pretty much select who the candidates will be.
The average hire in North America looks at a resume 6 seconds, guys. Six seconds. The average hire manager. So you don't get a lot of exposure. And so you have to make sure everything's impeccable, everything's up to date, have everything checked thoroughly. I always, anytime I make a document like this, I'm going to have 5 or 6 people look at it. And so, you know, that's where I've been able to grow my LinkedIn network, where I can have, I'm friends with 5 or 6 career coaches going to say, hey, take a look at what these changes are. And a lot of times people are willing to do that to help you guys out.
Excellent. Great advice. Now, so LinkedIn is the platform, and it's definitely a good networking, you know, platform as well. Obviously, besides recruiting, to your point, I mean, having friends on LinkedIn can help. I've actually, again, an experience that I got, you know, quite a few leads for jobs that I actually landed through, you know, friends in LinkedIn, and it worked out. So it's important. And I think I had the show that we discussed a little bit about LinkedIn marketing. That was like probably in March. But so next question that I think a lot of folks would want to know about. So career paths in pharma, right? And we talked about internships as a good entry point, at least getting your feet wet type of thing, you know, and getting to feel, you know, the different departments, the different functions. And in a lot of industries, it's very similar. There are internships available through, you know, the either the HR departments or some specific departments that do that. I've done that in the sales, you know, unit myself, where we had created internships, summer programs and all year long programs. But then for somebody that is now graduated, ready, looking for a career path, you know, what are the recommendations, and, you know, what are the different, you know, major entry points at a pharma, you know, in the pharma industry?
A lot of people won't like this answer at first, but customer service actually is a great way to start out. And the reason I say that is because it gets you into the door right away. And so customer service representatives are typically, you know, paid on a different lower end of the totem pole. So, you know, there's typically more jobs out there. Nobody really wants to do them right out of college because they want that big money job, right? But sometimes you have to take it slow. And that's what I encourage students. I know it's hard to do because I was right there too. Sometimes it's good to get your foot in the door. Take your 1 or 2 years experience you would in an entry-level job. I think customer service is really a secret gateway into pharmaceuticals, because guess what it does? Like we talked about, You're in that building during normal times, not right now. You're in that building. you can network with so many different people. You can learn about their jobs. Hey, what does the warehouse manager do? Hey, what does regulatory do? What does compliance do? What does marketing do? And then you start to learn about all these positions. You excel in your customer service role. Guess what? You can start applying for internal roles. And who hears about internal roles first? People that work at the company. So that's really your back gate to do. Now, as far as different careers there are in pharmaceuticals, obviously pharmaceutical sales is the biggest one. There's marketing, but there's different types of marketing. There's they have bigger companies, obviously have more marketers. So they're call them HCP marketers, which means healthcare provider marketers. Digital, which they're responsible for like websites. So if you're more analytical, there's that type of marketing. There's field-based marketing. Those are people that are more out in the field that travel and tend to go to speaker programs or do those type things. There is regulatory. So if you're a legal person and you want to go to law school, there's actually legal and regulatory things. Paralegals get hired by pharmaceutical companies. You think about it from the research side, there's people that love to work in a lab. They're scientific. Let's say you graduate with a biology degree and you want to work in a lab. Why not work in a pharmaceutical lab? Some company that's got a grant or initiative that's working on some things, work on that. And you can really, so there's multiple career angles that you can really go into pharmaceuticals.
And so what would be the ideal backgrounds for candidates to really land a good, you know, opportunity at a pharma? I mean, is it biology? Is it chemistry? Is it, you know, physics? I mean, again, it could be any of the above. Or to your point, it could be law and or business, but what would be like the one? Because the first thing that comes to mind, pharmaceutical drugs. That means I need to be like either a chemist or a biologist. You know, again, is that even, you know, a fact?
Not really. You know, when you think about the research side, and if you want to be obviously have, you know, some type of medical research, then obviously, you know, that person, that candidate's probably going to have the passion for biology or chemistry or that or biochemistry. And they're going to go more into those research, medical science liaison roles. And that's typically where they talk to physicians about studies or stuff like that. So you'll have that one sector, but most of the times my colleagues in pharmaceuticals have degrees in everything you can think of. So they have bachelor's in history degrees, communications. You know, if you're really, really interested in pharmaceuticals and you want to have a career, I would say just get your plain four-year degree in business and then choose a function that best aligns with your strengths. So, you know how we talked about if you're a little bit more analytical, that might be accounting. You might, my roommate in college, that was the first class me and him did together. After 1 hour, I said, I can't do this. And so he loved it. And so he ended up, he's a CPA now. And so that's what I'm saying. A lot of the times, if you know you want to go the pharmaceutical route of business and picking that function that aligns best with your personality and your strengths will benefit you a lot.
So I know that there are minimum requirements for folks to join the pharma, at least in the sales world. I know because you have to have a bachelor's degree. There's nobody that gets in unless you have at least that minimum requirement. Some other career paths, you might not even require a degree. You need some sort of state license. Is there a state license that's required first? And if not, I mean, what would be the, you know, the minimum requirement for someone to actually pursue a career?
Great question. So you do have to have a four-year degree. That is the bare minimum requirement. It really doesn't matter what you major in, as long as you could kind of explain it. You know, you don't want to show up to the interview and be like, well, you know, it took me 8 years to do 4 years of history and I don't really know what I want to do with it. I mean, you want to have a rationale of what your career pathway is, but really any degree. And then typically you don't have to have what you call a license per se. And there's only one place I can think of that you have to have that, and that's Washington, D.C. So if you live in that area, you do have to be licensed. That's the only area in the United States that I know of that that requires that. Otherwise, usually that's done by the company. The company will make sure that you do that when they hire you. As far as, you know, work experience, that's a big elephant in the room. A lot of people ask, well, you know, I don't have any experience. You know, I really recommend people, and again, they don't like to hear this, but this is what I did, is you take 1 to 2 years, you go into a role where you sell something to business to business. And business to business means like a copy machine. So I go into Office Max, I'm selling coffee machines or something like that, where you go to Home Depot and you're selling hot tubs. Something where there's a tangible product, you can track your sales. And if you perform well in that career, you can really write your resume to really any company you want to. And then you can get in without experience, but it's very, very difficult. So why not, while you're waiting to get in, go ahead and gather your experience at a different company? And guess what, Hurricane? I found some people that do this and they end up loving what they're selling and they end up staying and moving up at that company. So it is a really great way. I would say, 1 to 2 years, get your feet wet into sales and then start pursuing a role in pharmaceuticals.
So sales, is typically a wider, access point to pharma, in addition to basically, as you said, like customer service type of, roles. Now, what is, again, people will say, well, okay, I'm going to go to my college. I'm going to spend a lot of money going to college. What's the return on investment here? Plus I have to work a couple of years to get some experience to even be, acceptable as a candidate, right? But now, what is that going to turn in terms of dollars and cents? A lot of people go to college or get better degrees or better trim degrees to get a better career path that makes ultimately a bigger, buck. So what is that entry level point, in the pharma and sales or otherwise that people can see? Like, listen, if you're starting a career here, this is your potential earning from year one to the next few years. And what kind of growth opportunities would you have there?
Yeah, I can be real candid with that. So, when you come out of college, you're a broke college student. So any kind of money is great because you're finally working full time. And then you get out, and then I actually started in sales and I made $24,000 a year.
Hold on. It's funny. That's exactly what I was making when I started in sales. Now, talking about an interesting coincidence, go ahead.
Yeah, so, that was my base pay, and then I made commissions on top of that, but it depended on how much I sold. And, there was a ceiling, so the most I could make was $30,000. And so, there is ceilings to certain jobs. Now it's kind of changed. The game has changed where a college student can get out, get a $30,000, $40,000 base salary. And if you sell a lot, the potential is, some of these kids, what they're making, it really surprises me. I'll give you an example. I talked to Matthew the other day. He was selling restaurant equipment to restaurants. And so, he had a catalog and everything like that. And his base pay was around $20,000, $25,000, but his commissions were exceeding $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year. So, you're talking about 90 plus 100 plus your base pay, that's about 125 as a first year college student. Now, is everybody going to make that? No, obviously not. And so I think your reasonable range is when you get out there to expect, that $40,000-$50,000 range in your business salary career. But really, the sky's the limit, because the more you sell, guess what? The more you make. And what's your goal? Your goal is to be a good salesperson to get you into pharmaceuticals. So that's what I'm saying. A lot of people will go out there, they'll perform really well at a company. They'll be like, well, I'm not leaving here. And this is a product I like to sell. Plus I'm passionate. Why in the heck would I leave? And so that's why I really encourage people to get their entry level sales job first.
Well, sales also gets you a little bit more of exposure and direct contact with consumers, and it makes you a little harder, in terms of your skills. You've seen it all. You're the first line of defense. You're out there in the actual elements, exposed to everything. It's never easy, as people may think, but you can learn it quite a bit and certainly excel eventually. That depends. Some people just remain salespeople. They don't want to do anything else. Some people see career paths and advance to the next level. And I know in pharma, for example, the criteria of managing and leading, some teams, and also their hierarchy is very different from a lot of companies. A manager maybe in a pharma company is equal to a VP as maybe some other industry. So again, is that a myth or is that a reality? But that's what I was told.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's a good point, because I'd meet a lot of my colleagues. They've been in sales for 30 years and they couldn't think of doing a different career than pharmaceutical sales, and they love their jobs. And other people, you know, they want to do something different, or they have different career aspirations, or they've always wanted to lead people. Mm-hmm. And so typically you're right. If you want to be a regional sales manager or district sales manager in a pharmaceutical company, you're going to be a rep first. Nobody's just going to usually come in from a different industry. You've got to have that, like you said, your nose to the grind. You actually experience it, you know it. And then you start developing your leadership skills. You have good sales numbers, obviously, and your performance is there. You can move up pretty quickly in pharmaceutical sales. And you know, I've met a lot of regional sales managers, district sales managers that have even moved higher in the sales realm, or they went into a different role. So there's a lot of different possibilities out there.
So that's pharma, you know, and specifically sales and entry points. Now, your book, let's talk about the book, because it's an interesting spin on the book. And there is a story behind it. So let's talk about that. Don't Be a Zombie. That's the name of the book, right?
Yes,
all right.
It is.
What was the inspiration behind the book? And, you know, ultimately, what is the book about?
Yeah. So, you know, a couple of years ago, I was invited to this great privilege to give a TED talk at the Oracle Center in Redwood City, California. And I got to experience what it was like to be on stage. And I really prepared a long time for this because I'm passionate about helping people. And my whole passion is I really want people to find work they love. And I've met so many people over the years that don't like their jobs. And statistics measure up with that. About 70% of people actually don't like their jobs. And I found that statistically shockingly sad. And so I gave a TED talk about how to find this purpose and this passion. And what I mean by that is take your unique strengths, your abilities, your talents. You take those, you find them, you put that into a career, and then you go and do it and you enjoy it. And so I started out the whole talk was don't be a zombie. And I walked out on stage and said, I believe in zombies. And then everybody got quiet and like, wow, this dude's really weird. And they started laughing. And so that got people's attention, and it kind of stuck, you know, and it kind of stuck. And then I explained what I meant by a zombie was a work-life zombie, where they just get up 9 to 5. They hate Mondays. Oh God, it's Friday. Thank God. Oh no, it's Monday. And that's the repeat. There's no career path. There's no, it's okay to hate your job now, but I can't imagine doing that for 40 years of your life and wasting it away. And so the book is all about, it's a three-phased approach. It's number one is, why should we find purpose and passion? I talk about how life is short and we go through statistics and we go through perspective. Then I take you through what you do. Not a lot of books do this. So I actually tell you what to do. I give you a 25-day plan. And then we go through that. I give you specifics on what you should do, how to handle it. And then at the end, we all wrap it around back to what you can do in your life. And so that's really what the book's about.
Well, it is a deep book, because a lot of us, you know, to your point, the Monday, oh my God, the same routine. It's just like, you know, we refer to it, the rat race. It's just not happening. And, you know, my life sucks. You know, I'm not happy, you know, and of course, unfortunately, there's a reason behind that. I mean, there's a saying actually that says, you know, and I think everybody knows this one, you never work a day if you do what you like, or whatever you love to do, right? And a lot of us pick maybe the wrong path or something we're not passionate about, and because we just need a paycheck, and then we get caught into it, and then it's stressful, and, you know, you just kind of get in the mix of it and the routine. And before you know it, time's flying. And then, 20 years went by. What the hell just happened? And, you know, and I've seen this in some, you know, in my personal experience, some people, they start in a role and they pretty much in the same role, you know, for many years later. And nothing wrong with that. I mean, obviously, that's their choice and that's okay. You know, but then when you ask them and you really get involved with the conversation, they might say, well, I have no choice, or I have no other options. And I think that's where people make a mistake. There's always an option. You know, people change careers all the time. People become entrepreneurial. They start their own thing. You know, sometimes if you can't figure out a job, maybe find, you know, a business that you can start yourself, or learn something that can be a skill. There's a lot of different variations. So I think the concept behind the book is not only valid, but it's really solid, you know, grounds for somebody to. And if you have, as you stated, you have the measures and the metrics to follow, as like, this is a success formula right here. Just follow it by the letter, and you should be able to make it happen. That's important. Now, the book is available, I'm assuming, right, for, purchase on Amazon or?
Yep. It's Don't Be a Zombie, How to Find a Career You Love. It's on Amazon, and you can purchase it there. I'll comment on something you said, because I'm glad you brought it up. You said, you know, that's what I talk about in the book, too, in chapter one. I talk about, I want you to crash a plane in your life. And what I mean by that is, I actually got to hear Captain Scully. I don't know if you know the story, but he was a pilot. Everybody thought they were going to die. It was a plane that was about to crash. And pretty much they had said their final prayers. They were crashing. They spent about 20 to 30 minutes in the air. Plane was going down. And he was managed to save all passengers by landing on top of the water in New York. And that day, when people get off the life raft, they don't say, okay, gee, I wish I would have watched more TV, or wish I would have spent longer on the couch watching Netflix. They change their life, and they realize how life is really short, and that we should do something we love. So I encourage people to figuratively crash a plane in their life.
Well, you know, we can actually relate to another big event that's happened to us more recently, to the whole world. I mean, COVID has been a big, you know, driver of change. And a lot of people have realized, you know, that life is short. You know, we've had people around us, you know, impacted, you know, with their lives and, you know, the family, friends. And a lot of folks, you know, are taking a different spin on things. And like, wait a minute, you know, where did my life go? You know, I need to do more. People haven't traveled. Now you start really realizing like what all the stuff that we had and we took for granted. You know, now it's not anymore. So it is important to make, you know, to take those little refreshers and resets. Some people stay, again, same job, 20, 30 years, and then they basically, you know, retire from the same role. Now, again, some jobs do offer that kind of opportunity, and it's steady, you retire nicely, you get your nice little pension, and you're good. But it depends on the people's, you know, I guess, background, education, passion, ambition. I mean, we can add a lot to it. I mean, you know, it's not right. Just it's one single thing that makes it, but it's important to kind of realize that, hey, you can even do the exercise. I think, I mean, as a person, you know, we all have different views of things, and we have to just sit down and say, like, well, what am I doing? To your point, you walk out to the office and you're not happy.
Right.
You're not going to help anyone, not in the office, not your business, not your bosses, or not yourself. And then you come home and take all that frustration in your family because right. You're not really as excited as, and then that's a very big piece of when you choose a path and when you get yourself into a career as in general. Now, changing careers, how difficult is that? I mean, we're talking about that concept right now, but how is that difficult? Because that's really, people may think that, oh my God, it's I can't start again.
It's completely false. The problem, I think, with a lot of people is that it's work, you know, and when I mean that is it depends on how you're able to adapt to change. If you're a person that doesn't mind change and you like new technology and you like to learn and you like to change this, I don't think it's a problem at all. Where people that have that weakness, like me, I get stubborn. And so I think that's what my fault was a lot of the years, is like, I get complacent and I'm like, well, I don't want to change. You know, I'm in this, I don't want to do anything different. I got this technology. I don't like my iPhone. I never wanted to change from the old phone for years. Well, guess what? Eventually your phone stops working. And so that's a simple example, is if you're able to adapt to change and you're able to fix your resume, start networking with people from different industries, taking a new approach. Your resume, for example, me being in pharmaceuticals, isn't going to be the same if I wanted to go into IT with Google. It's going to look a little different. And so I need to research that on Google to make sure, hey, what are people looking for in this industry? Who could I network with? Who are some of the key contacts at Google or IBM? Because I want to go work in Silicon Valley, just using this as an example. And so I think it's difficult to change careers, but I don't think it's impossible as we make it out the scene. I think it's more of that, oh my God, I've got to learn a new something else. I've got to change my resume now, update my cover letter, make new contacts. And it just seems like an overwhelming theme, but really it's all about your preparation, your ability to change, and your willingness to do the work to do it.
You got to get out of the comfort zone. I think that's the biggest, you know, problem. We all get comfortable, lazy enough that, you know, status quo, I'm happy. But then again, it's figure of speech happy, because you everything says otherwise. You know, right. You think that you're happy, but nothing is really showing that you're happy. You're always stressed out. You're always anxious, you know, not happy at all, you know, taking out, you know, on everybody around you. And if you're leading, for example, a team or you're managing people, it gets reflected on how you treat those folks. And right. they're not going to be very pleased with you either. So it affects your performance. It's crazy.
Now, and there's yeah. common sense things too. You know, obviously, let's say I woke up tomorrow and I wanted to be a medical doctor. Well, guess what? I can't just go apply at the local hospital and become a doctor. Sure. You know, so you need to look at your pathway to get you there. So let's say I woke up. I hope I would do more research than just waking up. But let's just say that, you know, I decided my passion was to see patients. Well, I always talk to people, well, what way could we get you there besides an MD? What about a nurse practitioner? What about a physician's assistant? And so what courses do I need to take? What are my core courses? I need to talk to a college. I need to see how long this is going to take. What's the end goal? What's the investment? Like you said. So, you know, there's a common sense approach to that too. Obviously, if I wanted to be a CEO at Google, I can't just put my application in. You know, there's got to be a similar type of a career change, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
No, it does. Now you just hit a nice little point there. I've read this and I've seen this where there's a job opportunity and some people apply for jobs that don't belong to them or mm-hmm. they don't qualify for. And, you know, it's funny because you post a position and you get a whole bunch of people, you know, that have nothing to do with that career path and they don't even stand a chance to even get the interview. But they do that. Then what do you say to that?
You know, it happens every career that's posted. We get them and it's really a waste of time. You know, 85% of the jobs in North America are filled because somebody has a connection. And so only 15% of the jobs out there are without connections that are on an online server. So I know lots of people. I talked to a college student the other day who couldn't find a job. I think his major was architecture. And so the details are kind of blended together, but basically what he was saying, he was spending a year looking for a job. And I said, okay, I know it's tough out there, but let's talk. And what he was doing is every day he was applying to 75 different applications. And this was taking a lot of time. And then, you know, I didn't believe him. Then he showed me all these and then he had to write these essays. And I was like, dude, you're not even, you know, yeah. I mean, this isn't going to happen. We have to look at some of the careers that you're interested in. We got to fine tune your resume. We've got to apply for each job. We got to make connections. And so to your point is, I think it's a waste of time, but I think where it's not a waste of time is for you to use that energy connecting with somebody on LinkedIn and saying, hey, can I pick your brain for 10 minutes? I would love to learn more about what you do. Seems like you're passionate about it. Would you have any time this week, next? I'm game. And a lot of times people that love their jobs will end up talking to you for free. And then you can make that connection and meet different people that way.
Well, there is an actual tool in LinkedIn where a lot of people with experience or have, you know, leadership, you know, up, you know, I guess, you know, backgrounds, they can be advisors on LinkedIn. And, you know, and you can, if anyone that has that capability can become an advisor and they become available to people who need advice. And people will come into your inbox and they ask questions about how to, what would I need to do this and stuff. And that's easy. I mean, that's not even like, you know, really building a network. That's just basically looking at the advisors and sending questions and getting the right answers from multiple sources to get you a compiled, you know, good information that you can use to determine whatever the next path is or next steps are. You know, so I mean, tools are available. It's just a matter of knowing. And luckily, we have these platforms to kind of share some of this. Again, some people may say, well, this is something I know. And some others, this may be new news for them. Like, if it's, well, I didn't know that I can do that. But at the end of the day, if there's a will, there's a way. And there is plenty of information today. I mean, between podcasts, channels, YouTube. I mean, you can look something up, you'll find a solution and be able to do it. And it's important that, you know, to get engaged and, you know, ask questions. You know, you don't lose anything by asking a question. So they're going to say no. You know, you'll pick something up. It's good enough.
Right.
I mean, that's how I look at it. So now, besides fun, what are other some of the things for the career paths that you've, you know, helped people and maybe that'd be easier, you know, paths that someone, especially from college or somebody that's willing to make a move and change careers in midway. What would be some other functions, some other industries that would be easy access or I guess profitable enough, you know, and lucrative enough to make, you know, a move towards that?
Yeah. And I think it's all where your passion lies, you know, and what you're good at. And so a lot of the times I'll shed a light on some of the things. Like, I work with a lot of people, for example, that are, you know, motivated in sales. So if you look at sales, a lot of people that don't know different companies out there, there's a company called Newell Rubbermaid. And so it's the Rubbermaid products that are in your kitchen. A lot of the times there's a representatives that call on Home Depot and Lowe's and retail customers. I've seen people get into that industry and transition or either even stay in there and they love it. It's a great company. Another thing that a lot of people don't know, there's a payroll services company called ADP. It's the largest in North America. A lot of my friends have worked for them in the past. They're a great company. Many of them debated about staying. Others have moved up in that company. So payroll services is huge in North America. Basically, it's paying everybody's paycheck. And a lot of people don't realize that you have to pay a company a lot of times to handle payroll. And so you're selling these services to small businesses. And so there's stuff out there like that. But, you know, you can think outside the box, too, with your careers, too, by one of the great ways is, and I hate to promote my own show on your show, but there's the Zach Ballinger show. There's the Zach Ballinger show. And what my show is all about is there's 821 career paths in North America. I would venture to say, because I didn't until I started doing this, that most people don't know 25, 30. But my whole vision over this, and I have had about 75 guests so far, is to expose every career path or way there is in North America. So let's say you're interested in a career in architecture or design or fashion. You can click on the link and you can watch a video with a professional. And guess what? 9 times out of 10, that professional that comes on my show, they say, hey, if any of your audience wants to link in with me, here's my LinkedIn. Well, there's your key contact right there. And so that's what I would tell people is tune into the show. You'd be surprised at what kind of careers that you probably are going to be interested right there in that library.
So, like, give us the connection for the show. I mean, how do we, you know, promote it to folks right now listening in and watching?
Yes.
And also, if you could share that with me so I can put it on the actual description of the show.
Yeah. So, you know, the best way is it depends on what social media platform, but you can go to zackballinger.com, ZACKBALLINGER.com. We're actually working on the website right now. I've got a call after this. We're fine tuning that to put that career library right on the website. It's not there yet, but all my social media links are on that website right now. And so guess what? I have Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, any of those, YouTube, they all just connect me. It depends on what people like. Some people like the Instagram, some people like the Facebook, but I want to encourage everybody to get the LinkedIn, and so they can follow that show right there on any of my social media platforms.
Excellent. Zach, thank you very much. I mean, I think that's a great resource and people can actually tap into it. And again, the purpose of this show is to give access to folks, you know, things that they may, you know, potentially use to better themselves and their, you know, lifestyles and careers and all that. So I know the time is limited and you do have the other call. So I want to thank you for accepting the invitation and coming on the show and for sharing valuable information with the audience here. You know, any last remarks?
No, I'd just say, you know, if you're out there and you're discouraged, you know, right now we're in the middle of a pandemic. So, you know, there's the unemployment rate's high. A lot of us are not doing jobs that we really want to be doing. But, you know, I'd say it's okay right now to not like your job. It's okay for a moment. But if that's your mindset for 40 years, then we've got a problem. And so what I would say is this pandemic's really taught us a lot about, when I talked about this for years, I said, there's no such thing as a stable job. There's no such thing as a stable job. And people would look at me like I had three eyes in my head. Well, what happened was, is this pandemic brought that out. There is no such thing as a stable job. So I would say, if you're stuck in that fear and you're that complacent and you're dreading your life every day, it's time to change. And we're meant for so much more. And that's what I would leave on.
And those are powerful words, and you know, I will not add anything to them. I appreciate the time. Thanks, Zach.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you.
And you know, again, Zach Ballinger and .com. That's where you can get his link and get the information that potentially can help you. You know, I guess you know, speed up your career moves and the next level that you're looking for. That being said, for our viewers and audience listening and watching today. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Hurricane Aid here. You're on the iHealth channel and iHealth Radio. And we'll be talking soon at the next show. Have a great night. Bye-bye.